It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 137. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. We talk about the Hoops team and their diminishing tournament chances, and also what chances they might have against the Zags on Thursday. Next up, it's Matt and I to talk about the Hoops team, what's happened to some of the key players, and what they need to do to beat Gonzaga. We also talk about the NFL draft and the draft potential of Cody Hoffman, Manu Maliuna, and some of the others who might be considered on draft day. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can catch us on iTunes. You can always catch us and a lot of other good stuff at loyalcougars.com. And you're going to listen to Jay Drew and then Matt and me right now. Welcoming back to the podcast, a frequent guest and friend of the podcast, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. Jay, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It has been a while. Good to be back on with you.
Yeah. It's good to be back on regularly scheduled podcasts here. So it's been a while since we talked. When we last talked, the basketball season was in its infant stages and hope sprung for a West Coast Conference championship, maybe even regular season, and all sorts of wonderful thoughts like that. All that's in the past now, five conference losses now on their resume. But let's talk a little bit about this past week. The loss to Pacific was pretty devastating, and I think you said it in your blog, and pretty much everyone said it. There goes an at-large tournament bid. And then they kind of surprised everybody by going in and beating St. Mary's for the second time. Has your opinion on their at-large bid, assuming they don't win the conference tournament, which of course gets them in automatically, has that changed with that St. Mary's win, or do you think maybe with a Gonzaga win this week it would change, but otherwise they're going to be one of those last teams sitting there watching on Selection Sunday not getting into the tournament?
Yeah, it really hasn't changed. I just think that Pacific loss was too devastating. I just think when the committee sits down, they're going to look at these five losses, especially the Pacific's RPI is around 100, so that wasn't especially damaging. But when you add up the Pepperdine, Portland, LMU, those losses were really, really hurtful.
Yeah.
As far as so I have a hard time. I kind of bowed to myself after that Pacific loss. I said, I'm not jumping back on the bandwagon. I'm not writing another story about these guys being on the bubble, because I'm kind of convinced they could win out and still not get back. But I would say this. I think if they do win out, and I think if they beat either St. Mary's or Gonzaga again in the conference tournament, then I think they've got an outside chance, a fighter's chance of getting in. So
yeah.
I'll say that. But frankly, this team hasn't shown it's consistent enough to go anywhere and win. Which would be three straight games in the conference tournament. They just haven't shown that. So
No, I'd agree with you. They certainly haven't. Is it possible? Sure, anything's possible, but not likely. One thing that happened in the game against St. Mary's that I'd love your perspective on, because I know you've watched a lot of basketball at multiple levels, from pro all the way down to high school and probably other levels as well. Something I had never seen before was in a key moment of the game, the ball going off the ref's foot. Had you ever seen that? Because I was watching the game and going back on the DVR, is that what happened? Because at first I thought he had lost it off his own foot. And then was that just bizarre? Was the ref in the wrong spot? I mean, it was kind of weird, and ended up being, in a lot of ways, a very key moment in BYU being able to beat St. Mary's.
Yeah, that was really bizarre. And to answer your question, no, I've never seen that before. It was kind of a weird thing where the Cougars were coming over to trap Kerry Carter, and he kind of wheeled around real quickly with the ball, And I think he even caught the ref off guard. There wasn't a lot of room over there up by that, right in front of the St. Mary's bench along the sideline there. And so I think it was just a combination of him wheeling around really quickly and the referee getting maybe just a few inches too close to him. And then bang, it went off his foot. So that was another strange play where I don't know if TV, how it came off on TV, but somebody shot a ball. I think it was Collinsworth. I'm not sure. And it almost looked like it hit the back iron and almost looked like some air went out of the ball because it kind of stuck right there and dropped in. I can't remember who shot it or to give you better details, but that was also one of those things I'd never seen before. So.
Yeah, it was a strange game from officiating to terrible play by the Cougars in the first half, much better defensively and in the second half. But one thing that's, at least in these last two games and a little bit before that, is you see, you know, some players in slumps. Obviously, this is a bad time to have multiple players in slumps. But the player I wanted to ask you about was Eric Mika. As a freshman, it's not like he looks like he's lost his legs. That might have happened earlier in the season when he was a little banged up. But he just can't stay on the floor with foul trouble. And I know we want to blame the refs, and there were certainly some questionable calls in both of those games on the BYU big men. But in the end, he has been a non-factor in two straight games, or at least a very limited factor compared to what he usually is. Is this just normal freshman big men stuff? Is this something you think is fixable, or is it just, gosh, it was just two bad games in a row where the refs called it a little tighter and he made a couple of silly fouls in combination with that?
You know, what I think it is, it's a combination of what you just mentioned, but I also think that Eric's been involved in some kind of, you know, a lot of banging, a lot of bumping, a lot of where he's gotten under the opponent's skin. I think opposing coaches, when they meet with the referees before the game, I think they've asked them, keep an eye on Mika. Because right off the bat against St. Mary's, Brad Waldo came across the paint, and him and Mika kind of got tangled up. They were both to blame. They both were kind of right there bumping and all that, and with their arms, you know, intertwined. And they called the foul. Right, 15 seconds of the game, they called the foul on Mika. That had to have been a referee watching, you know, specifically watching and sending a message, I'm not going to tolerate that, Mika. And then, like, I think it was the second time down the floor, or no, then he picked up an offensive foul, but basically kind of the same thing. I just think the referees are keeping an eye on him really closely. I think he's starting to get a reputation as for, you know, for physical play that maybe is a little bit beyond the, you know, the borders. Dave Rosenthal, that's why he started Anson Wanger and Luke Worthington in the second half, as he said, you know, we need a defense, but he also said he didn't want to throw Mika right out there on the floor when the referees were keeping an eye on him real closely for the first couple of minutes like they were in the first half. And, you know, he turned out to be prophetic because Mika got in a little bit later and sure enough got that third foul. So, to answer your question, it's a combination of all those things, but I do think referees are looking out for or watching out for him and not giving him any leeway.
So as we look forward to Thursday night's game against Gonzaga, we've got, you know, obviously Haas, we know who he is, and yeah, he has some off games, but you know, his off games are still usually pretty decent. And Collinsworth, we kind of know what we get from him, fills up the stat sheets, occasionally some turnovers, but overall great play. We talked about Mika. Who else is going to have to step up against Gonzaga? Who are the one or two other guys that if they don't play better than they have recently, then it's just going to be another quick, you know, blowout type of loss against the Zags?
Yeah, I think all of them are going to have to play reasonably well. Nate Austin is going to have to rebound like he has been. He's going to stay out of foul trouble. He's having a really good season. He's just not an offensive threat. You got to kind of ignore that. But he's got to show up like he has been. Carlino's got to give him some offense. I wouldn't be surprised if Carlino starts in this game. I just have a hunch. Don't know anything. We won't talk to Dave Rose until Wednesday. I wouldn't be surprised if Carlino is back starting and maybe even running the point. And Collinsworth with the knee, you know, it looks like he had an MRI today, and it looks like he tweeted out that it's good news. So I think he'll be okay, but just with what has gone on, I wouldn't be surprised if Carlino's the starting point guard and they move Collinsworth in at the four in an attempt not only to get Collinsworth or get Carlino in the game sooner, but also to keep maybe one of the bigger guys out of foul trouble a little bit in the early going.
Yeah.
What we just talked about before. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's something to look for.
Now, a lot of, you know, fans have been complaining about the defense throughout the season, and certainly on the road in conference play, the defense has been problematic. At home, it's been, at least statistically, quite a bit better. What is making this defense have so many issues? Is it a personnel issue? Is it schematic? What do you think Rose thinks? And what do you think, you know, are there fixes on the team, or is the roster just, there's no fix, this is going to be as good as it gets for the remainder of the season?
Yeah, I don't see it improving a lot. It lacks a stopper. It lacks a defensive stopper. In the past, at least when I've covered them, they had Jackson Emery, they had Charles Abuo, guys that could stop. You could put on the other team's best player and you know, hold them to a reasonable tally. The other thing they really have trouble doing is stopping dribble penetration. And you would say, well, other teams don't get that many layups. Well, they don't, because you got, you know, some big guys in there. But what happens is these guys dribble, penetrate, and then they kick it to and then a guy has to sag in, like a Hawes or a Halford has to sag in or whatever, and then they kick it out to a three-point shooter. So everyone says, oh, their perimeter defense is bad. Well, yeah, but I think the root cause of everything is they allow too much dribble penetration. And then when that happens, everything's all messed up. In zone defense, or even man to man, where other players have to collapse to help, and that leaves open a guy. So, and the West Coast Conference is just an excellent 3-point shooting league. There are a ton of sharpshooters in this league. Every team seems to have one. The Cougars will get one next year. This kid named Chase Fisher, I watch him in practice quite a bit, and he can really light it up. I think he's gonna be a good addition. But anyway, that's beyond the point. As far as your defensive question, stopping dribble penetration is their biggest weakness, in my opinion.
Well, the point you hit upon with Fisher filling this role next year, I mean, we kind of thought Halford might be that guy. He has not played consistently enough to be that guy. He's certainly had those games. This just seems so bizarre with this roster to not have anybody that is consistently making three-pointers. Collinsworth and Hawes shoot at a good percentage. They just don't take that many. I mean, this is really an anomaly in college basketball to take so few three-pointers as part of your offense. Is this something that concerns Coach Rose, or the fact that they actually, offense, they average a good amount of points per game, is offense not really his concern at the moment?
It's not as much. He's always harping on defense. It's turned into a pretty good rebounding team. At the start of the season, I remember the Texas game, the Wichita State game, they just got killed rebounding-wise. They did against Pacific the other night. But it's generally been a better rebounding team, but the big weakness is for on the offensive end is they rely so much on transition basketball, and other teams are just taking that away. And so in the transition game, believe it or not, you get quite a few three-pointers out of that kind of that early offense, especially with, like, Carlino likes to pull up. And a lot of teams have taken that away. So, like you said, the two guys who have the ball in their hands the most, Hawes and Collinsworth, just don't like the three-point shot that as much. Hawes will take it. Collinsworth has been really, really reluctant to step up and take him.
Yeah, he certainly has. So that'll certainly affect a high percentage, but it doesn't do much if he's not shooting very many of them. Last basketball question before we switch sports here a little bit. When you look at this Cougars team, there are some depth issues. I mean, obviously, especially on the inside, Is this something that you think, this has been true for a couple of years now, is this going to be something that BYU fans just need to get used to, that there's usually only going to be a couple of serviceable big men on the roster? Or as you look at that pipeline of recruits coming into the program, is this something that's just kind of a couple-year blip because of missions and maybe some misses on the JC recruiting, and 3 or 4 years from now will be a long-gone memory of this year?
Yeah, I think they're working to address it. You know, next year, of course, Mika will leave, but Isaac Milton has already returned home from his mission. People probably see him on the sidelines in street clothes. He'll be in there. Jamal Ait, the transfer from UNLV, is kind of an undersized four. He's got a really nice post-up game, a lot of good moves. He's not real big, but he'll be there. So, I think they'll be okay inside starting next year. I think they could really use one more big guy, but they basically don't have any scholarships, really. In fact, they're going to have to kind of run off one guy, it looks like to me, unless a guy voluntarily steps down, just to give out all the scholarships that they have promised. So, to answer your question, I think they'll be fine in the near future. I think they just had kind of some bad luck with the Chris Collinsworth injury and the Ian Harward injury, the career injury, and Steven Rogers. He was also had to quit early, so all that kind of piled up to leave them inside.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned, it's probably a couple of weeks ago now on your blog, the invitation that four BYU Cougars have been invited to the NFL Combine. Of course, Vannoy and Hoffman we would expect to be invited to the Combine. Then it's Manu Maliuna and also Daniel Sorensen and Unga as well, the linebacker. So five Cougars, yeah, invited to the Combine. As you talk to people in associated with the program, obviously Vannoy and Hoffman people expect to be drafted, but depending on what projection system you look at, there could be one of those other three that get drafted before Hoffman, not likely before Vannoy. What are you hearing? Are these obviously they're all trying to prepare for that? Unga hampered by a knee injury, but what do you hear about their preparation? And do you hear any noise about the fact that we might get two or three and maybe even four guys in those first seven rounds?
Yeah, I'm not hearing an awful lot. What I've mainly heard is talking to Bronco right before the bowl game, and then the other day at signing day. He seems to think there's a little more interest in Manu Maliuna than the other two guys, than in Sorensen or Unga. Of course, Unga had knee surgery, so he had the combine. He'll just be doing some of the written tests and things like that. He won't be doing any on the field stuff. So obviously that's going to set him back. So I'd really be surprised. Daniel Sorensen, I'm just kind of a little skeptical, just because unless they're really standouts, BYU guys that have been on missions don't seem I think teams shy away from them just a little bit. So Daniel Sorensen is what, 25 years old now, so. I think he'll get a free agent chance, and the same with Manu Maliuna. He's even older. He's 26. So I would be surprised if those latter three got drafted, but you just never know.
Yeah. And can catch on as free agents, when sometimes it's actually better, right? Because you can pick your situation a little bit more. One of the things that has been a criticism of Bronco has been the lack of Cougars in the NFL until Ezekiel Ansah went as the fifth selection last year's draft. It had been a couple of drafts since someone had been selected, and certainly not a lot of Broncos recruits. Some of the ones that went early in his tenure were actually recruited before he got there. Do you think if a couple of guys go in this, two, maybe even three, go in this draft, that this is something that criticism will die, And maybe even more importantly, was it a valid criticism of Bronco as a college football coach to begin with?
You know, I think it is valid. I do think there has been a lessening of blue chip talent there. Obviously, Hoffman and Van Noy are Broncos recruits, and he's done that. But in a way, Hoffman was kind of lucky. It's not like BYU beat him for anybody else of significance. So yes, the criticism I think is valid. But yes, I do think, to answer your question, that yes, I do think that this year and maybe next year, if he can get a couple of guys drafted, that kind of that stigma will go away. But I really do think there's something to it, just from the talent that we've seen on the floor or on the field.
Yeah. And one of those areas that's been kind of lacking, where BYU used to have quite a few back in the day guys that ended up playing in the NFL, is on the offensive line. And last year, the offensive line was much maligned throughout the season, struggled at times, played well at other times. And is this something — they were a very young unit. I've asked every guest, I think, since the end of the season, and I will continue to ask the guests about this one because it's a question I'm really curious about. Is this offensive line, do you think, talented enough to get better? Because younger doesn't always mean they're going to get better. Young and bad just may mean they're not talented enough. Or is this something where, yep, they were young, they grew through the season, and they're going to be much better going into the season? What's your feeling on that offensive line?
I think there are a couple guys that are going to get better. I think there are other guys that have kind of hit their ceiling. I think we've seen what Riker Matthews can do. He's okay offensive lineman. I just don't see him improving. He's been injury prone. I've lost his name. Kersley. I can't remember his first name now. Kersley.
Right.
He's a star in the making. I think he's really going to be good. Yeah, yeah. Braden Kersley. So, yeah, I think he's got a few guys in there. This Lapu'aho, who's coming home from his mission from Hunter High. I'm drawing a blank on his first name as well. I hear great things out of it from everybody's really talking on that this kid's going to really be a good one. So I think the talent is there. I think you're going to see, you know, two or three different guys this fall starting at offensive line, taking the place of guys who started this last year, I think, which shows you that some of these other guys coming in are right now are better than guys that are even more experienced.
Sure, sure. Well, thanks, Jay, for coming on. Appreciate your time. We all hope we're both wrong that they can put together a run in the tournament, flipping back to basketball. But I'm more on your side. I think they haven't proven that they can. But you know, we'd love to be wrong on that one.
Yeah, those tournaments are fun.
Absolutely. Well, we'll definitely check out your continuing coverage of the Cougars on the Salt Lake Tribune, and we'll make it so it's not such a long time before we have you on again. Thanks, Jay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Adam. We'll see you.
Man, it's podcast time!
Podcast time! Time for the podcastery.
Time for the podcastery. We're back in action, and it's been a crazy week in BYU sports, which, of course, we will talk about. But
always
first,
a crazy week in BYU sports.
That's not true.
No, it's not.
That's not factually correct.
I just wanted to say something. When have I ever been worried about being factually correct? Do you even listen to this podcast?
I don't, actually. I don't listen to the podcast. I hear enough of you while we're recording it.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. So, Matt, have you been watching the Olympics?
Oh, is that going on right now? Yes.
Yes. Now, let me ask you an important question. Is a goal a goal if the net is slightly askew?
Not in international play.
Now, I have to say, my favorite part about this was a news story saying that there was, and for those of you that don't have any idea what we're talking about, number one, get out of that rock that you've been living under. And number two,
and watch some hockey.
And watch some Olympic hockey, because that was one of the most, that was one of the coolest hockey games I've ever seen. But the point is, there was a disallowed goal by the Russian team that would have likely won the game. and then they would have been got a bye, and instead we're recording this on Monday night. They will have to play on Tuesday an extra round of a game. But anyway, the news story where the Russian protesters are outside the U.S. embassy. Did you see this?
No, I did not see that.
Protesting the victory to the U.S. embassy. I'm pretty sure the ambassador of Russia had nothing to do with it.
That's pretty good.
And they made the correct call. Whether the rule's stupid, that's I think the rule is absolutely insane. If the refs don't catch that the net was slightly dislodged, then you don't get a goal. I mean, that's a little crazy. But any other favorite Olympic moments so far? Yeah, I know you are a big fan of the ice dancing.
Actually, I am a big fan of the ice dancing. And I'm missing the ice dancing duo from America right now to record this podcast. Luckily, got a little thing called a DVR, so I'll catch up on it later.
And by the way, it's not actually happening live.
Hey, you know what? You're not happening live.
That's true. Everyone listening to this podcast, I will also be on tape delay.
So, yeah, I watched a little bit of the ice dancing, a little bit of the figure skating as well. Don't really know the difference, but I've watched them both.
They jump in the air in figure skating. That's the difference.
They throw them around in figure skating.
Yes, the pairs. Yes,
they
the
pairs. Chuck those ladies into the air.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I also saw a little piece this evening of a documentary. This is the 20-year anniversary of Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding.
Yes. Great. One of the greatest Olympic moments of all time.
Oh, my gosh. And Tonya Harding comes off just as poorly in an interview in 2014 as she did in 1994.
She may actually be crazier now than she was then.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. But they actually had one of the only interviews I've ever seen with Nancy Kerrigan since then.
Which is crazy. I watched the whole, there was a 30 for 30 on this that came on a couple weeks ago. I watched that whole thing. Nancy did not participate.
She did not, but she.
But somehow NBC got her in on this.
Mary Carrillo. Yep. Mary Carrillo got her. And they showed a couple bits of her interview. And, you know, I feel bad for her because, unfortunately, instead of being remembered as one of the best figure skating athletes in U.S. history, her legacy is the fact that some idiot whacked her with a piece of metal. And she still got a silver in the Olympics.
Yeah.
On a bum knee. I mean, that should be the legacy, but instead it's, well, you know, some dude whacked you on the knee and likely with the knowledge of some other competitor. Awkward.
Dicey.
Dicey. So I haven't seen the 30 for 30. Worth watching?
It was pretty good, but there was no Kerrigan input, which, you know, hurt a little bit, but there were a lot of people in her family that did interview. It was interesting to see. They kind of laid it all out and gave Tonya another opportunity to deny any involvement.
How'd she come off?
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy and guilty looking?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. So any other Olympic moments worth discussing?
Well, my family and I got into a debate tonight because I've decided I'd like to become a Winter Olympian.
Curling?
Curling, we figure, is probably my only shot.
There are old people in curling.
Listen, the curlers were the guys who were the only people who even looked remotely like me.
Yes, yes.
I mean, let's just call a spade here.
So what's the name of the Russian bobsled guy? Kabov?
I don't know.
You should know. He's famous. Anyway, he first competed in the Olympics. It wasn't Olympics.
He was luge, wasn't he? And yeah, now he's bobsled?
He was the Soviet luge champion in 1990. Soviet! The guy's still running bobsled. And his daughter is a skeleton athlete. And by that, I don't mean a dead athlete.
Skeleton was the one I wanted to do, but my family decided that I probably couldn't pull it off.
Probably?
It looks to me like you just get a running start and jump on a sled. I've done that a lot.
And you do not mind danger.
No, and I won't touch the brakes the whole way down. That's fine. Somebody's just going to have to teach me how to steer.
I'm sure you'd figure it out after a few crashes if you survived.
So, but I think we're going to land on curling.
I have curled. And it's just as easy as it looks.
It makes no sense. I do not understand the rules. I watched it for like an hour the other day. Still not really sure what's going on.
It's actually not that hard to figure out.
A lot more yelling than I would have expected.
Yeah, I know. It is pretty funny. I saw it live in Salt Lake City. And we were sitting next to some crazy Canadian curling fans. And they were annoyed by all of the rest of us who had no idea what was going on. And I wanted to be like, seriously, you're a curling fan and you don't realize that 99.9999% of the world has absolutely no idea what's going on. I mean, come on.
See, I was fine until I realized it wasn't just shuffleboard on ice. It's way more complicated than that. It is. Those shoes are awesome.
I have worn the shoes.
I want a pair of those shoes. Will they work like that in my kitchen?
Do you lacquer your floor?
Maybe.
Okay, then probably. If you do lacquer your floor. So, Matt, let's talk about the Cougars. Unless you want to still talk about curling.
No, I'm done. I mean, we'll get back to it if I ever find an opportunity to try it.
That's true. We will. Maybe we should form a curling team.
Huh? I don't know. Do you think you're ready to compete on my level?
That's a 10-4, good buddy. I've been able to compete on your level since you were born.
Oh, here we go. I don't
know what that means. Because quite frankly, you were quite a better athlete than I was. But I always beat you.
But when I was first born, you were a much better athlete than I was.
Yeah, I was six. I was, you know, I was going down the slide and swinging on the swings.
Get up on 2 feet, which I was not able to do at that time.
Take that, you little infant. Yeah. So Matt, let's talk before we descend into complete insanity. Let's talk about the Cougars. So Saturday night was a good night, but a few nights before that, Thursday night was a really bad night for the Cougars. They lose to Pacific, which I think is a technical college. Was that too much?
Too much. or you mean technically it's a college?
Yeah, it's technically a college. So I don't mean to demean Pacific. That's not nice. But what I said was fairly accurate. The problem here is Pacific isn't very good, and we lost in fairly, I would say, you know, humiliating fashion, not in that we got blown out, but just by the fact that here we are, it's our fifth conference loss, and three of those losses are to teams that, quite frankly, we have no business losing to. What was your emotional state? Any loss
there is in humiliating fashion, let's just be honest.
Yes. So what was your emotional state? Were you basically, this is it, they're done. I don't care about this team anymore? Or were you still like, well, I don't know if they beat Gonzaga and St. Mary's?
I don't know if I'd say I don't care about this team anymore, but I was definitely, they're not going to the tourney. Let's just say at that point, I was definitely in that state of mind.
So a couple nights later, it's time for a gutty win against St. Mary's, who we've now beaten twice. Inexplicably a little bit. And in this game, thanks to a referee's foot, always good when the referee's foot helps out.
You know how mad we would be? Like, we would be just merciless. I mean, think how bad we talk about the WCC officiating. If that had happened to us.
And the listeners will have heard this. We just talked to Jay Drew. I have watched a lot of basketball in my life, and that's the sport I played growing up through high school, okay? I covered high school and college basketball as a sports writer. I've reffed games up through the junior high school level. Not that that's some big accomplishment. But I've watched a lot of basketball games. I have never seen a ref's foot come into play when there wasn't like some type of loose ball. You know what I mean? When there was a crazy loose ball, yes, sometimes I've seen the ref inadvertently get caught up in that. And quite, you say on that one, oh, that happens. No big deal. to have on the corner after a trap, a guy spin out of a trap and bounce the ball off the ref's foot, the guy should be fired. He should never work again. I mean, that would be like me showing up to work and like a presentation with my boss and like dumping coffee on his head. You know what I mean? It's like just turning and going, huh, how's that feel on your head? Like you said, I would be so flippin' mad.
It's completely unacceptable.
And the ref just kind of looks at the St. Mary's bench and the player unapologetically. Maybe he was nicer after the game, but he kind of like, hey, I'm just part of the field. Yeah, get out of the way. Oh, that was crazy. That was crazy. But skipping from that, it was a
Is that the same guy that was running the replay booth against San Diego State?
It might have been.
Somebody needs to check into that.
It might have been. So kind of some weird stuff happened. They played terribly in the first half, but the defense was very, very good in the second half. Did you feel differently after that St. Mary's game? Did you feel, wow, it's possible they could get a run on the tournament? Or did that bad first half and kind of some of the luck that led to the victory make you think, yeah, this is nice, but it doesn't change my opinion?
It was a great win. It was fun to have them win when Dellavedova was having his number retired. It was fun that he was sitting right there.
Yes. Like that,
you know what I mean? And it's I can't say I hold a lot of ill will necessarily towards St. Mary's, but I love beating them. And to beat them twice, and that whole situation, that was great. It was a ton of fun.
Yes.
Great win.
Yes.
This team is still not going to the tournament.
Yes, I agree with everything you've said, especially the part about doing it on the Dellavedova night.
Awesome.
Did they give it
awesome?
Did they get it out of bobblehead?
I don't know. If they did, though, it should be the early days of Dellavedova when he had the mop.
Yes, and the mouthpiece. Make sure the mouthpiece is visible.
Yes.
So I agree with everything you said, and they still won't make the tournament. And Micah's inability to...
I'm pretty sure it's still pronounced Mika, but that's fine.
Gosh. Mika. I said it right in the first part of the podcast. Give me credit, listeners. He is struggling the last few games just to stay on the floor. And, yeah, there have been some chintzy, cheap calls. But, there's nobody. I mean, Austin's a nice little player. There's nobody after him. There's nobody that can do what he does. So when he is in foul trouble, it's just a completely different team.
Yes.
If he stays on it, like we said, they're capable of beating anybody in the conference, including, well, let's flip to Gonzaga. All right?
Yeah.
So last time they played Gonzaga, it did not go very well.
No.
So 84-69, this was in Spokane. The big three of Mika, Collinsworth, and Hawes did pretty well. And after that, nobody did well. I mean, Halford, 1-for-7. Carlino, 1-for-6. Had one turnover versus 2 points. Sharp actually was okay in that game. Austin had a kind of weak game. So Matt, let's play some odds makers. Percent chance that you give BYU to pull off the upset Thursday night in Provo against the Zags.
50.
50? High.
Yeah.
That's high.
Listen, it was a gutty win on the road at St. Mary's in what is this? It's not a huge crowd there, but it's a good environment, I think, as far as a road game is concerned.
Oh, yeah. They're a pretty intense crowd.
A weird, tough loss to Pacific, but that's, on the end of a four-game win streak at home.
Yes,
so
this game will be at home.
I think they've got a shot. Anytime they play anybody in the Merit Center, I think they have a shot. You know, but as you and I have talked about before, I feel like this team, to a certain extent, is taking on the Matt Carlino personality.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, and so really, and you really don't know which team is going to show up on Thursday night. But if the right team shows up, I think they can beat Gonzaga. I think they can. But I don't know that they will.
Well, but you're giving him a 50-50 shot, which is higher than I'm going to give him.
I think it's probably higher than anybody's giving him.
Well, probably. I'm giving him like a 35. I think, the as you mentioned, being in the Marriott Center makes a big, big difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they are coming off this win, I think, helps against St. Mary's. I think the big problem we have against the Zags is they have a lot of big men, and we don't.
Yeah, we have Uno.
And for whatever reason, David Stockton plays like his dad against just us.
So he hand checks and
wears very short shorts. You know, total side note. Have you seen the 30 for 30 on the Dream Team?
No.
So there is this great... No, it's not 30 for 30, but it was on... No, it was on NBA Network, the Dream Team, okay? And I think you can find it online is what they said. But the point is, there was all this great stuff in there about the Dream Team. But the best sequence is they're talking about how none of the Dream Teamers can leave their hotel room in Barcelona because they get absolutely mobbed. And the only two that would leave their hotel room was Barkley because he loved it, right?
And Stockton.
And Stockton because no one noticed who he was. He's walking down the streets of Barcelona and he even stops some people to ask them what they think, some Americans that he meets, what they think about the Dream Team, and asked a woman who her favorite player was, and she said, John Stockton.
Oh, no way.
Yes. It's one of Stockton's kids then points to her shirt, and I had the exact Dream Team shirt with all of their character faces on it. Uh-huh. And a guy, one of the kids, and it might have been David, I don't know, points to his dad's picture on her shirt and goes, that's my dad. And she looks down and looks up at John Stockton, looks down. She's like, oh, my gosh, you're John Stockton. Oh, it's precious. Anyway.
Total oh, that's pretty awesome.
So that may not have been David Stockton who pointed that out on the video. But the point is, the guy's averaging 7.4 points and 4.1 assists. Very respectable. He's a good little player. Against us, I feel like he averages like 20 and 10. That's not actually true. He had 14 and 7 in that game against us. But he wreaked havoc on the dribble drive penetration. And Pangos obviously lit us up on the outside as well. Mm-hmm. So Matt, what are the keys here? What do we, besides stopping the unstoppable David Stockton,
what do we I'll tell you do? What would make a huge difference for this team against any opponent is learning to play perimeter defense.
Yes, that would help.
I don't know that you're going to get that done in the next couple of days, though. But you know, if you got players playing at this level, they ought to be able to figure something out there. And then the second thing I think really comes down to how early Mika gets into foul trouble. And the earlier that happens, the less the likelihood is that we pull out a win.
You mean if he gets two fouls in the first like three plays of the game, that could be a problem?
That is lights out.
Yeah. That could be a bad.
Hopefully, bad. Yeah. And just as long as he doesn't throw up any choking signals during this game, we should be fine.
So Matt, I agree with you that the perimeter defense has to be there. I just think somebody besides the big three has to have a huge night. Somebody besides Mika, Collinsworth, and Haas. Whether that's, and most likely it's Carlino, right? I mean, I guess it could be Hofford.
Yeah, but Carlino's who you're looking to in that situation, right?
Yes. I think, you know, Collinsworth had an MRI today, tweeted out that things looked good on his knee. So, I mean, if he doesn't play, if he, like, steps out there and then the knee gets gimpy and he goes to the bench, I think you can kiss the win goodbye, okay? We're not deep enough. But assuming he plays and Carlino can have a big night, I am with you. I think this could be victory, and they're still not going to make it to the tournament.
Nope.
Unless they go on an incredible run in the conference tournament. But again, they haven't been able to play consistently enough where I would feel comfortable saying, yeah, they got a pretty good shot at that.
No.
So, any other thoughts on basketball before we switch over to football?
No, I mean, it'll be fun watching this team down the stretch. I think that if they can put together a couple of wins here, they could be fun to watch in a different tournament. But that's just where this team's at right now.
Yes, Yes, and I think we've talked about this with Jay, with Brandon Gurney a few weeks ago, and also with Greg Rebels, all of our guests recently. I think the future is bright for BYU basketball.
Absolutely.
These two seasons are just a lull before, yep, I think, which will be, honestly, I think it'll be one of the greatest runs in history. Now, who knows if that actually plays out, but based on the players that will be coming back from missions, coming in as recruits, all that stuff, I think we're, great things are coming up. Great,
yeah, it's just, it's a down year.
It's a down year. Down year. So Matt, switching to kind of a topic that hovers over both basketball and football, but is certainly dominated by football, is conference realignment, which we are contractually obligated to speak about at least 10 podcasts a year. It's just in the contract. I'm sorry. We have to do it.
Well, then let's get it over with.
So Greg Welch, one of our fellow writers at LoyalCougars.com, talked a little bit about, I don't know that there's a lot of news. Last month, so it's definitely not news. The Division I administrators met, and they're talking about restructuring the NCAA. Now, there's no real news of what that would look like. They, as usual, put together a committee, which, who knows, right? But there has been some momentum, at least on the football side, of that, those big five conferences, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC, potentially creating their own football division. Okay? I don't know if that'll ever happen. But
I think they're going to call that the Bowl Championship Series.
Or now the playoff. Playoff?
Playoffs?
Looking at that and kind of looking at the state of how it is, Greg talks about where BYU fits into this. And my biggest question for you, Matt, is what do you think, put BYU aside for a second, what's the best thing for college football? Is that the best thing, to put the five best conferences kind of in their own deal and stop this first tier, second tier, third tier type of existence in the current structure? Or do you think the current structure, once this playoff starts getting into place, yeah, the other teams are at a disadvantage, but what's the big deal?
I think I'd go with your second option. I think the other teams that would be at a disadvantage, but you know, it creates an opportunity for, really, you just go ahead and crank that open.
Oh, I'm
it creates
sorry.
The opportunity for the Cinderella story, which is what everybody wants to see every once in a while. I think if you go to a model where that next tier of teams is completely eliminated, you lose that. And that's part of what makes the NCAA basketball tournament so fun to watch, is, you know, those teams that win in the first and second rounds that really have no business winning those games, or that, you know, come out and shock the world. And that stuff's fun, and it makes it interesting. And so I think you still want to have that component. I'd hate to finally get to a world where we have a college football playoff and we eliminate that piece of it. I that's what I'd like to see. I think that's probably what's best, in my opinion, but I don't know if I believe that that's what will end up happening.
I agree. Yeah.
It's not where the money is.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, but I agree with you. I don't think that's where it is. The other part that came up at their conference as well is, you know, Jay Billis has been beating the drum on this for quite some time, is a stipend for the players.
Yeah.
And how much would it be and all this kind of stuff. If the conferences, now I'm with Greg, he ends up saying that he thinks there's going to be some type of cap on this. It's not going to, SEC is not going to be able to say we get to pay our stipends $5,000 a month and, you know, whatever else. If and when money starts coming into these things, Matt, Is this a bad or a good thing for BYU? In some ways, as an independent in football, you'd say it's a good thing because they can make their own call on stipends and don't have a conference to hold on. But on the other hand, they're in a basketball conference, the WCC, that has small schools with small budgets, comparatively speaking to them, and Gonzaga and BYU being the schools maybe with more money to throw around. So is this stipend thing, if it were to happen, do you think it's a good thing for BYU, a bad thing, or neutral?
I think it's a bad thing for BYU because I don't think they're going to get real competitive. You know, if you look at these stipends and make it a competitive issue between schools, I don't know that BYU is going to get into an arms race with anybody. You know, so they might have the horses to outpay players thinking about going to some WCC school for hoops, but I don't know that they will, and they're certainly not going to go throwing a bunch of money at football players.
Right, right.
They're just not going to do it. And so I think it makes them a little bit less competitive, you know, for recruiting purposes if we move to that kind of a model.
See, I think it's neutral because I think eventually it will even out. Either the NCAA will come in and say all Division I football players get paid X, right? And you either have to pony that up or get out of Division I, okay? And I don't think it'll be exorbitant. I think it will be a relatively easy sum for most schools to handle, and I think BYU will be able to absorb that.
You think BYU pays it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think BYU pays it. And quite frankly, I think they should. You and I have talked about this a little on the podcast. I think they should pay. I also think, you know, there should be some type of health insurance type of thing for these players long term. But that's a slightly different issue. So I think BYU will pay it because I think it'll just become part of the norm, just like the scholarship money is. You know what I'm saying? I think it just becomes part of the system. I think if they go to some type of system where the conferences can determine what the pay is, I think what will happen is the SEC will pay a lot, as will some of the other conferences. And I think in some ways it'll still be neutral to BYU because they won't pay as much, but they were already at a disadvantage to those schools. So I don't know that it makes it a bigger disadvantage. It might to a certain recruit that's in a certain financial situation, but I think to most recruits it will be, I want to go to an SEC school and they get recruited by them and they go, right? We don't win head-to-head battles against Alabama today, right? So right. I don't know that we even have any. But, you know, that's – so I think it's kind of neutral. I don't think it's going to be bad. I hear what you're saying, but I think it's kind of neutral.
But we'll see. We shall see, my friend.
We shall see. So, Matt, let's talk about the 2020 and 2021 seasons. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. Those are going to be great ones. Oh,
they'll be so good. Arizona State, home and home. Usually with these announcements, you and I go, that's nice, but whatever. Is this one of those, or is this awesome?
Listen, the world could end between now and then.
I'm pretty sure the Mayans, no, didn't they predict that last year?
Yeah, I think it was 2012, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the world could end, and these, you never know this far in advance if they end up playing these things or not.
Our starting quarterback for that season, I think, is in junior high.
Yes, yes. Probably. Yeah.
Shoot, depending on exactly how old he is and when his mission pans out, he could be in elementary school.
Now you're just making me feel old. Why did you do that?
I'd have to really think that one through. Anyway. Yeah.
Do the math there, buddy, and get back to us. So we both say that's nice. It's a Pac-12 team. Who knows if they'll be any good by then. Hopefully we will be good in those seasons. But you know, as an independent, these things come up. I'm much more interested in the more recent seasons. More recent? Sooner seasons. I don't even... How do you say
it? I don't know. You're a Sooners fan now? All of a sudden we're talking about Oklahoma?
Yeah, shut up. So, whatever, the 2015-2016 seasons, I'm much more interested in announcements about those seasons, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Much more interested. So let's talk before we get to the NFL draft stuff, Matt, defensive line and linebacker off-season preview.
Yes!
So we've already previewed all of the offense, and we gave expert analysis on that. There's no doubt of that.
Expert analysis.
So let's start with the defensive line, Matt. We got some returning players, including in the middle, big Mr. Johnson, who, due to some injuries and some other things, got a decent amount of playing time in 2013. I think he's the key, quite frankly, to this defense in 2014. Do you think I'm crazy?
I don't know if I think you're crazy. I mean, I don't know where else you go, right?
I mean, if he is as good as I think he could be, I mean, when Malu Maliuna was healthy and good, BYU's defense was one of the best in the country. right? Mm-hmm. When he was last year, when he was either hampered by injury or not playing, they became, until Johnson kind of emerged towards the end of the year, they became, it just exposed that defense, because you couldn't get pressure up the middle on the pass rush, as he sometimes, Monomaluna, would do, which, you know, shifts the pocket, and you didn't get that run stuffing ability that Monomaluna has. So I think Johnson can be that impactful a player, and maybe even more so than Monomaluna.
Wow, that's a pretty tall order.
I agree. But I saw he made some plays last year, and again, defensive tackles rarely get the accolades, right?
Right.
It's a thankless job, and most people don't even know you're there, right? Because a lot of plays where you make your best play, it's the linebacker who gets the glory on the sack or the stuff on the run. But I think he's going to be good, and I think that whole lineup, I think we've got some good players there. I'm excited.
Yeah, and we definitely we signed a bunch of guys in that spot too. So I think out of the whole group here, there somebody ought to be able to step up and be able to make an impact.
Yeah, I think so. So moving on to the linebacker spot, Matt, we lost some good players there, and the question is this group going to be anywhere close to as good as the group last year? I think it's unfair to expect them to be, after you're going to lose potentially two NFL draft picks, depending on where Unga goes. So Matt, what do you see out of this linebacker core? Is this something where you think, you know, they're still going to be good, or do you worry about them as an asset? Because for the last 4 or 5 seasons, you didn't have to worry about the linebacker group.
I think you're looking at a group that's had some really good examples to follow and people to watch. I think you got a couple of guys in here that are ready to step up and make that difference. I think Fua is a player. I think Bills is a player. And, you know, and then when you look at, you know, I know that this Isaiah Kafusi is listed as, they haven't listed on at least the signing day page, is, you know, DBLB. I don't know that he's got the size to really get there for a linebacker, but I think we've got some players in there that can make a difference, that can step up. It's just going to be a matter of finding out who those people are. Do I think we have a Kyle Van Noy in this group? No. Do I think we've got I don't even know if I believe we've got a Rob Morris or a Shea Mirbrook in this group, but I think but we'll see. I mean, maybe one of these guys is, but I don't think, you don't replace Kyle Van Noy.
No, you don't. And, you know, you've got Bronson Kafusi, where he will end up playing, depending on how they line up, and they line up in a lot of different formations. Sometimes he'll be a defensive end. Sometimes I think they will stand him up as a linebacker. I think he'll kind of go between, and he's very talented. Fua, you mentioned, he is a freak athletically, but he doesn't have, at least yet, he hasn't put it all together to have that complete game, say, that Van Noy has. Well, Van Noy, that's an understatement. But I think Fua has the athletic ability to be that kind of player. I just don't know, you know, having the athletic ability and then becoming that good at anticipating where the ball's going to go and reading the offense, that's different, right? And Fua had some problems where he was way out of position in the second half of the year when they had Van Noy split out as a defensive back sometimes to shut down a wide receiver. So, you know, but I think Fua could be that guy. And I think the rest of this group, I think there's depth. To your point, I don't know if it's as top-heavy as some of the linebacker cores have been in the past few years, but that's probably an unfair expectation. You know, but yeah. I think this will be a solid group. I don't think we'll be sitting there midseason going, wow, that's the weakness of the BYU defense.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I actually don't know if there will be a weakness. I don't think they'll be as good as they've been the last 2 years. And we'll talk about defensive backs next week. But I think this will be a solid unit again. You know, top 30 type of unit. Not a top 15 unit anymore, but I think Bronco has proven he can put together and call a really, really good defense year in and year out. So I think that will continue.
It's a very well-coached group.
Yes, yes. So, Matt, let's talk Kyle Van Noy for a minute. He was ranked as the top outside linebacker at the Senior Bowl by a couple of different publications. He is prognosticated to go somewhere in the late first round through the second round, depending on what projection you look at. After that, quite frankly, it gets a little murky. Some people, since the bowl games and stuff, you don't see Hoffman as a standout. I think he's dropped a little bit on boards. And then you've got the other three that have been invited to the combine, which is Manu Maliuna, who we talked about before, Daniel Sorensen, and Unga. Matt, I think of that group, we'll get back to Hoffman in a second, Manu Maliuna, Sorensen, and Unga. I think Manu Maliuna is the guy that could play in the NFL the longest if he could stay healthy. I don't know, he wasn't able to in his college career, unfortunately, stay on the field consistently. But if that kid could be healthy, he is a NFL-style nose guard. You know?
Listen, if his NFL career is half as long as the years that his college career spanned, he would break the average career of an NFL football player.
That is true. That is true. You know, and we've talked before about Sorensen might end up being a special teams guy that sticks around for a few years while his legs are still good. So let's get back to Hoffman, Matt. I'm seeing on the projections, a lot of them have him as a sixth or seventh, which once you hit that area, that means you could also go undrafted, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and earlier and even last year, you heard people talking about him as a third, fourth, fifth round draft pick. So take your BYU goggles off for a second. Where would you, as a NFL talent evaluator, where would you put him? Is he that kind of guy, or you know, third, fourth, fifth round, or is he more like where he's been rated at least the last few months? And the combine, of course, will change all of that.
I think he's more like where he's been rated the past few months, and I think he's the type of a player that's going to show up at the combine and really turn some heads. And you know, that's a real opportunity for him to improve his stock. You know, he's one of the top handful of linebackers in the draft, in my non-BYU goggled opinion. So I think he gets drafted. I don't know if he's a first rounder. But you know, he's the type of guy who can come in, make an impact, pick up a system, and get in there right away and do some things. And I think that evaluators in the NFL are going to pick up on that. And he's going to get drafted.
Yeah, I think he gets drafted. I think he gets drafted. I think he's actually more of a third, fourth round talent, and that might be the BYU goggles on.
See, I was going to put him in probably third round.
I watch a fair amount of NFL football, and there is a style of wide receiver now where they can throw the ball up to the guy, and he goes and gets it. And I don't think he's elite in that respect. I mean, this isn't Megatron here, but I think he is good enough at that, as well as fast enough to have a good career as a, you know, second, third type of wide receiver in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And with some upside maybe attached to that, because he was hurt this year and is faster than maybe he showed in his game film in 2013. So Matt, the last time BYU had three guys taken in an NFL draft, that was 2005. Brady Papinga, Scott Young, and Sean Nua. What are the chances we have three again? If you're playing odds makers, what percentage chance that three of these guys slip in to the draft? I think we're both confident there'll be two, but what are the chances there are three?
I think that's tough.
90%!
90%! That's not where I'm going. I'm probably a little bit high on Hoffman. So I'm going to come in and be a little bit more reasonable when we get past that point. I don't think the chances of a third are very high at all, really.
Manu Maliuna, 90%.
But really, if you're Manu Malayuna, you don't want to get drafted.
No, I'm not saying he wants to get drafted.
Because you're going
to
get drafted late. Who knows what the situation is. You want to be able to go out and play the field.
I think he's the perfect player for an NFL team to take a flyer on in the sixth or seventh round. A big guy who has the upside of, if he plays to his potential, a third or fourth round pick, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you want in those last picks. You're looking, at least some teams, you're looking for that guy that just slipped because of X reason. Sketchy background, injury history, played for a small school, a bunch of other things that could make a guy slip below his true talent level. So I like him. I don't think Unga and Sorensen have much of a chance. Unga's hurt, and Sorensen is, I believe he's a special teams player at the NFL level, and you usually don't use draft picks on a special teams player. Yeah. You can find those guys in the rookie free agent pool. But I do think all of them sign. Whether they make rosters, I think all of them will be in training camp.
I think they all get a shot. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
So they all get a shot. Well, Matt, this has been fun, as it always is. You go work on your curling, buddy.
I'm going to go get ready. You go. Prepare. I just got to find a place to do curling in Houston.
I'm sure there's lots of curling clubs there. Outdoor ones, too. Where is the Olympics in 2018? The winter?
I can't pronounce the name of the city. I always mess it up. I always mess it up when I say it.
Pyeongchang, South Korea. That's where it is.
So it's Pyeongchang, not Pyeongchang?
I have no idea. You're asking a guy that speaks Spanish and a tiny bit of Portuguese.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
So you want to ask me to badly pronounce names in Brazil? I can help you there. I can't really help
with it. I think it's Pyeongchanggan. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
You're humiliating yourself.
You're humiliating yourself.
That's also true. So we should expect to see you in a USA curling uniform for 2018 in South Korea.
Yes, it'll be my second trip to South Korea. I loved it the first time. I'd love to go back and get a gold medal.
Really? Your second trip, huh?
Yeah.
Hopefully the next time it'll be in North Korea.
I'm not even sure where to go with that.
Well, think about this. Okay, 2022, the cities, Krakow, Poland, Oslo, Norway, Almaty, Kazakhstan, Lviv, Ukraine.
Lviv.
And Beijing, China, which, come on, that's ridiculous. Listen, didn't they just have the Olympics?
If Lviv gets the Olympics, I'm going. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Whether you're on that team or not.
Right, I'll be there.
All right. How about this? I'll go with you.
Dude, let's go.
That's a commitment, buddy.
Dude, let's go. Let's go to the Olympics in 2022.
Yeah,
but I'm not, I don't know. Actually, these would all be pretty fun. I don't know if I'm going to Kazakhstan, but the rest of these would be fun.
I would go to Oslo, and I would go to Krakow, Poland. Poland's a cool place.
Poland's supposed to be awesome.
Poland's cool. So anyway, all right, man. Well, this has been fun. Check out all the coverage of the Gonzaga game at loyalcougars.com. We will be back next week, I'm sure, with some awesomely exciting guest. I have no idea who that is yet, but we'll find one. And we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars!